I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
And I'm Mike Lupica, MSNBC, MLB.com.
I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press. Welcome to the Sports Reporters Podcast for this Monday, post-Super Bowl Monday. I just arrived back from Atlanta. In fact, took the subway, or if you call it the subway, the MARTA, out to the airport, slept in the airport, got on a plane, was back here in time to do the podcast, and none the worse for it. In fact, the trip was almost more exciting than the actual game. 13-3. I guess we're all old enough to remember when Super Bowls were perennially terrible.
Yes.
They were usually blowouts. 45-10 was kind of a standard operating number. And then we had this amazing run of just incredible ending Super Bowls, dramatic down to the finish, many of them involving the Patriots. Here, finally, the Patriots basically had a blowout. 10 points they won by, which for them is big. Outside of the boring nature of much of the game, was this as much a nod to the Patriots' greatness or a nod to the fact that maybe the Rams weren't quite ready for this stage?
Mitch, I think it's the greatest. Listen, we all had our fun on social media about the lack of scoring last night, and smart, funny people were chastising me for not appreciating the defense. To me, it's the greatest defensive performance in the history of the Super Bowl. And I talk about it a little bit in the parting shot, but only 10 teams in history ever scored more than these Rams did. And we cannot do what we did from December 1st on and started to talk about how it wasn't going to be 54-51 the rest of the way. It was going to be defense the rest of the way. We can't run that narrative past people and then not embrace what we saw. The greatest defensive coach in history, he's the greatest coach in history, and to me, what they did and what Bill has done so many times in his career, he takes away what you want to do. What do you want to do? You want to run play action and run the ball? Okay, I'm going to put six guys up. I'm going to take that away from you. I'm going to let Dante Hightower play like a free safety. No, I have to respect what the Patriots did to that offense last night.
I speak from the perspective, obviously, of a hometown team and a hometown fan. And so I was enthralled with the defensive aspect of it. Well aware, I'm checking out Twitter at halftime and America's going crazy and what a horrible game it is and so on and so forth. It's 3-0. And I'm saying it's from an entertainment point of view, from the neutral, obviously I totally understand they're looking for more fireworks, particularly in the end of a season such as we had. And yet if you're, I'm going to stick my toe in the water here and I'm probably going to regret this. If you have the remotest kind of sports sophistication beyond the emotion of a fandom or maybe a betting interest in the game, which motivates far too many people, then if you have the remotest kind of sophistication, you are appreciating the fact that isn't it wonderful, as a contrast, that at the end of a season when all we talked about was the offense and the high-powered offenses and the top four scoring teams were involved in the final four, that we get a game that went right back to the old virtues of defense and was a defensive clinic on both sides of the ball. Brady did not have a spectacular game at all. He had one drive that resulted in a touchdown when he looked like Tom Brady on the whole afternoon.
But Bobby, let me just jump in and say one thing to you. Yes, I completely agree with what you just said, okay? And even on a night when he has, quote, an off night, he's still 21 for 35 and 262 yards.
Yep, and when he had, and he, you know, but he was mortal until the time came. You got to do something somewhere, Tom. Can you do something? Can you do it once? And on that drive, that was Tom Brady.
I don't know.
The throw to Gronk alone was
worth
the price of admission.
One of the great throws he's ever made in the Super Bowl.
Anyone who loves football. Yeah. It wasn't as good as Eli to Manningham. That's the best clutch throw I've ever seen in the Super Bowl. But it was damn good. Three guys there had to be perfectly placed, and it was. And where only one man could catch it, and he did.
The nice part about a 13-3 game is that you can sum up the key moments pretty easily, because there's a lot of stuff that it was punting. And from 9 minutes and 49 seconds left in the fourth quarter to 7 minutes left, less than 3 minutes, that basically won the game for the Patriots. That was the drive that Brady looked like Brady. Two passes to Gronk, one to Edelman, one to Burkhead, and a run by Michelle, and they're in. The other moments were when Brandon Cooks dropped what should have been a touchdown pass. And let's, I want to say this about Brandon Cooks. He was the only guy doing anything for the Rams in terms of receiving, and he was also the guy who cost them the game receiving. He had several catches that could have been game turners. The one at the end of the end zone where you know, he was wide open and was waiting for the ball to get there, and who
Jason McCourty.
That
Jason
was McCourty.
That was
got,
he's
just
not
got
culpable.
There in time, but he could have caught that.
He could, oh,
I mean, great
no,
he could. Yes, he could have caught
that ball.
No,
no, no, no. I disagree, Mitch.
Now,
the other one he should have caught.
No,
the other one he should have caught, Mitch.
Jason McCourty made the play of the game. That's the play of the game.
But he had it in his hands. Other receivers hang on to it. He had it in his hands, and then McCourty got his arm and pulled it down, and he lost it. And the other one was the one that set up the interception, which is the play that really
that's the
killed.
One, Mitch. I'm telling you, McCourty arrived at the same time the ball. I respectfully disagree with you that the one he should have caught was the one where Harmon and Gilmore were there. That's the one right before the interception. That's the one that shows you how fragile these games are and how fragile sports history is. If he makes that catch, it's a completely different game. The very next play, Goff panics a little and throws an interception. I'll give you that one. But the other one, Jason McCourty just made a great damn play.
He made a great play, but I we're just going to disagree. I think a great receiver can hang on to that ball. I've seen it done. I mean, it doesn't – because it happened the way that it happened, you can't imagine it happening any other way because it looks like he just has so much control of his own. But I've seen receivers shake off those kind of hits and hang on to the ball. I don't know if Brandon Cooks does it.
In support of what Mitch is saying, I must report that the stated reason why they let him go after he gave them a pretty good year last year and represented their only stretch-the-field receiver was that they felt that he just doesn't fight for the ball. And so he's not good at fighting for the ball. Yeah. If he's wide open, or if
and
he's Goff got enough
separation.
And Goff
didn't help him on Bob, but Goff did not.
We're outvoting him 2-1, Mike. 2-1, we're outvoting him, Mitch.
The ball
No. He could not have caught that ball because McCourty made impossible for him to catch that ball. Nobody's catching that ball.
And by the way, let's talk about that, just that aspect of it, okay? Because it's a huge moment in the game. Look where McCourty came from. It was like Jackie Bradley Jr. at Fenway running a country mile to run down a fly ball. He, you know, Romo was right. He wasn't even supposed to be in that play.
No, he wasn't. He and if Chung, you know, this is the other thing. And when Chung went out, I'm thinking, oh my God, they're going to exploit this. And Chung doesn't make that play. He doesn't possess that close down speed. And it was Jason McCourty, not Devin, who made it. Jason, you know, who's now in his first Super Bowl where his brother's got multiple rings. I mean, all the little subplots of you know, hearts and flowers.
Are there any more McCourtys they can get, Bob? Are there any more in the shoot? I just would like to know that.
No, I think that's it. No, but right, Mitch, you're so right, though, by saying that we can easily identify the handful of meaning, you know, of pivotal plays in this game. Absolutely. Positively,
and you can't. You know, the Rams can't say that they were not given opportunities in terms of the narrative of the game, the ebb and flow of the game. Because look at how it begins. They win the coin flip. They elect to defend, which, you know, I thought was playing right into New England's hands because it was exactly what they wanted to do, what they did the week before against Kansas City, keep the offense off the field. But that was just Sean McVay saying to his defense, okay, I'm going to trust you guys. And it looked like a failed experiment. Brady was moving the guys right down the field. Uh-oh, here we go. We got a Kansas City game all over again. And then what happens? His first pass is across the field pass, which I guess he just wasn't ready for him. It was on Brady. That was on Brady. That was a bad throw. And Tom Brady, on his first pass in the Super Bowl, makes a bad throw. It's intercepted, and no points are scored. You're set up. You're set up if you're the Rams. And they do nothing. They just do nothing. And multiple times when they had a little sliver of an opening, they did nothing when they had their chances. I kept feeling, even when it got to 3-3, didn't you guys sort of feel like, hey, the Patriots can't just keep acting like we'll win this game by three? You know, it had that feel of, all right, we'll get in the fourth quarter, and all of a sudden the Patriots are going to feel the pressure of, hey, we're supposed to win this thing, and the Rams are suddenly going to light it up, and they're going to run away with it. And I saw some Twitter people predicting exactly that. And instead, the Rams never lived up to that kind of moment. They never took advantage of the fact that they had taken the greatest team in the history of football into the fourth quarter, tied at 3-3. Instead, they felt the burden of that, and that emotionally shows that they weren't ready for this game. They weren't ready for the win in this game yet. They were ready to get there. Maybe but next year,
Mitch,
they'll be ready
to win.
Mitch, as
you were watching the game, you know, I mean, you know that, and I said this on Twitter last, if somebody got to 10, it was going to feel like they got to 100. And that's exactly the way it felt when the Patriots scored. But you, again, ready or not ready, all I know is, and I'm stuck on this, and I will keep saying this, this is the greatest defensive performance in the history of the game. There have only been two, there have been 53 games, okay? 53 Super Bowl games. The Rams are the first team not to score a touchdown since Super Bowl VI, okay? Super Bowl VI, when it was Dallas 24, Miami 3. The only other game where a team did not score an offensive touchdown was Super Bowl IX, when the Vikings scored on a block punt. So nothing like this. There have been low-scoring games before. The Rams scored 527 points this year. They got three last night. And again, it comes – whatever they didn't do, I'm focusing on what the Patriots did do. And this was – this was Belichick at his best. The Dolphin, you know, maybe Brian Flores is going to be the defensive coordinator from the Patriots, who becomes a great head coach when he's announced probably today as the Dolphins coach. But the defensive backs, they survived Chung going out. Hightower was never better than he was last night. And they just simply, what did they have, like 50 rushing yards? I mean, it was unbelievable.
They ran one. They were in zero plays in the red zone.
Yeah, I know.
Zero plays. And their score, by the way, was on a 53-yard field goal.
14 first downs.
There was one play in the whole game in the red zone, and that was Michelle's touchdown run.
Those numbers are never going to repeat themselves.
Mitch, can we talk about Michelle for a second? I mean, what a great player this kid. This kid's going to be a great player. He was as much an offensive star to me last night in the game as Brady or Gronk or Edelman was.
But this to me says, for all the teams, all the people who are listening out there who have, you know, mediocre franchises like where I am with the Lions, this says why the Patriots are different than everybody else. They draft 31st, and they pick Sony Michel. And last night, Sony Michel looks like the best pick in the draft. You know, they just do that. I mean, Julian Edelman was a 7th-round pick. We're always constantly talking about Tom Brady being a 6th-round pick as being the most astonishing rise ever. You now have a Super Bowl MVP who was a 7th-round pick. Kyle Van Noy was discarded by the Detroit Lions. Discarded. He can't play.
Interesting.
And he ends up there. So the Patriots have a way of getting guys who are not all number one draft picks. At the end of the draft, you know, usually you say, well, at least they won't get a draft pick that's going to make much of a difference, because that's the penalty you pay for being a great team. Instead, they pick 31st. They get Sony Michel, exactly what they needed in a running back. And he was critical in the fourth quarter. Forget the touchdown. That was big enough. But he was critical in chewing up yards and eating up the clock when they most needed it to keep L.A. off the field. And between him, between Edelman, between Brady, between all these guys who just go to the Patriots and turn out great, I don't know. You said what you did about the defensive coordinator going to Miami. Maybe he'll be the one. But that's what we said about Matt Patricia coming to the Lions.
That's why I said it that way.
It's Belichick. It's not any of these other guys. They get to work with Belichick. That's it. It's clear you have to take your hat off to him. Whatever he does, however he schemes, whatever he comes up with, and when it is a defensive performance like it was last night, you have got to go back to him. Maybe when they score 40 points and win a game, you got to give a little more credit to the offensive side. But when it's defense, it's him. And look at what he took away from the Rams. Mike, you pointed out earlier in the show that he's really good at taking away the one thing. He took away like three things. He was like one of those big rushing linemen who get three guys tackled at the same time. First of all, Todd Gurley who there's going to be a longer story about him. There's something mysterious happened to him over the course of the last 3 weeks. This guy just can't disappear and still be healthy the way that he is. But they shut him down early. Mike, he had three attempts. It wasn't like he had 14 attempts and 14 yards. He had three attempts in the first half, three for 10 yards. They took him completely out of the game. Robert Woods, remember we were talking about Woods is going to be the guy that everybody, you know, that's the guy that they focused on. He ends up with five catches. They tried to go to him 10 times. He ends up with five catches, 70 yards. One of them was for 18. But you don't remember any of them being significant. Woods was their guy, you know. And this is exactly – and then, of course, they just kept Goff from being anything other than a pedestrian quarterback. You can't remember a play last night where his scrambling was really fantastic. There were a couple rollouts that he, you know, flipped around and hit a short pass. But here's a guy who, you know, elongates plays because of the way he can move around the backfield, and they took that away. So – it's Belichick when it comes to defense, and they just have it, and nobody else does.
All right, Mitch, just to amplify what you were saying earlier, and this is when I discovered this morning, the number, it's astonishing, and I think you'll agree. On their current 53-man roster, they have 14 undrafted players, and they are the champions of the American football world. I want to repeat that. On their 53-man roster, there are 14 undrafted players. So what they – we had a good story in a paper in the Globe yesterday about Belichick's man. What is a Belichick player? What constitutes a Belichickian athlete? And its hallmark is – basically it's versatility, but if you get down to it. But anyway, so they're looking for things in people that clearly not everybody else is.
Well, and they find them.
14 undrafted players on their 53-man roster.
All right, so let's talk about the GOAT for a second, okay? And again, this – if you lined up all the nine Super Bowls he has played, maybe the only one where he looked least effective after this one was when they lost to the Giants, Bob. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
Okay. But when he had to be great, it's the same as the game was the season for the Patriots. They came on late, and when they had to be great, they were great. And I'll keep going back to this because we have to talk about it a little more. That just wasn't a good throw to Gronk. That was a great throw. He was covered, okay? He had a step of daylight, and you look, it's a perfect spiral. He puts just enough air under the ball, and if Gronk doesn't catch it, maybe somebody on if he's a little late with that pass, the way Goff was to Brandon Cooks, who knows what happens, but it wasn't. It wasn't. And I'll tell you something else about Edelman, okay? And it shows you the difference between football and baseball because his PED bust was a sidebar last night to him becoming the MVP of the Super Bowl. But, Mitch, you've heard me say this before. I am so resistant to the idea that Gronk is truly the only great receiver in his prime that Brady has ever had. No, he's not. And maybe PEDs will someday keep Edelman out of the Hall of Fame, but Edelman is a Hall of Fame professional football receiver.
Well, Welker was a pretty good one, and that's Tunk. And we're talking about receivers he's had. He benefited greatly by the presence of Wes Welker for a couple of years. There's no question about that. That play was, you know, that was, as I said, only that was the only sequence. That's the only drive in which, you know, he was that Brady. But that's the one. They only needed one in that game.
And Bobby, how open was Edelman again? I thought Bob Sutton, the fired Chiefs coordinator, was still calling the defenses not Wade Phillips.
That's why I think that's about the Patriots. All right. The thing, Julian Edelman is a great receiver, but Julian Edelman will be the first to tell you he wasn't blessed with gifts that you know, like a Calvin Johnson has as a receiver that you just walk onto the field and you're a diva receiver. What he had was exactly what Bob was talking about before. That personality. He's a quarterback. Okay, yep. He's a quarterback in college. He's not a receiver. He's a quarterback. He comes into the Patriots and he's on the team for 2-3 years, basically is just a backup anywhere that they can use him, special teams and things like that. Doesn't really get into the whole swing of it until 2011. He plays defense sometimes when they need him. He's a special teams guy, and he grows into the role. And because he works under that Patriots system, yeah, by last night, after at age 32, he's been in it for 10 years, he knows how to find the spot in the zone. He knows how to sit down in between defenders. And it looks like, wow, how did he get so wide open? Because he thought his way through it. He's been coached. He's worked through that system to use the good talent, but not fantastic talent that he was blessed with to become an amazing receiver. And he bailed out Brady time and time again throughout the course of those drives. But whether it's him, whether it's Danny Amendola used to do it, he does not doing the same thing now that he's not on the team. Welker mm-hmm. was that kind of guy. He didn't do it once he left. They do it when they're with the Patriots system, with Brady throwing to them, and with Belichick and the coaches that he hires coaching them. That's what moves them from good to great. I don't think Julian Edelman is a Super Bowl MVP with any other team. I don't think he's a Hall of Fame player with any other team. I don't even know if he has a career very long with any other team. But he's in the right place, and he's right there. And that's what you have to say about Brady, that it's not – you're right, Mike. It's not that he hasn't had receivers to throw to. He hasn't had thoroughbred receivers to throw to, with the exception of Randy Moss for a short period of time. Josh Gordon, if you call him that, for a couple of games, you know, a guy here and there. But over the course, look at Brandon Cooks when he was with the Patriots, and Brandon Cooks last night. You know, they just are better when they're wearing that uniform and Brady.
But you can say that, Mitch. You can look back through the greatest teams in pro football history, and I'll throw out a name. Is Bart Starr a Hall of Fame quarterback if he's playing for anybody other than Vince Lombardi? Is Jim Taylor, Jim Taylor, Paul Hornung, go on and on, Jerry Kramer, and it's yes, systems do produce greatness. And when you look at Edelman, no, he doesn't look like Calvin Johnson. But you don't have to be Calvin Johnson to be great. Okay, and Welker proved it, and Amendola proved it briefly, and you know he did have Randy Moss for a while, but yeah, obviously everything runs through Belichick and Brady. I was explaining it to my daughter yesterday as she was on her way back to Boston to watch the game, and I said, "Honey, 17 years ago, Mr. Belichick and Mr. Brady won their first Super Bowl together, and they have a chance to win another one tonight. And nothing like this will ever happen again in the history of American sports."
And they might not be done. I mean,
oh no, I have a prediction, Mitch. I have my first prediction for the 2019 regular season. Bob and Mitch, you want to hear it?
Yeah.
Okay. It's about the seventh game, the Patriots, maybe on Sunday night or Monday night, will look really, really bad. Okay. And Brady will throw three picks. And at that point, we will just declare everything over. Okay. And then Belichick will say something like, "On to Miami." And then they'll play a little better. And then it looks like they're not going to have home field for the playoffs. Stop me if you've heard this from before, Ryan. Okay. It looks like they're not going to have home field. But because they're in the East, they do get home field. And then they'll play a high-flying team in either the first or second round. And next February in Miami, we'll be talking about how they won another Super Bowl. And now they're 7 and what would that make them? 7-3 lifetime in the Super Bowl.
By the way, I just want to throw this out there at random because we would be remiss not to do so. We've discussed all the leading candidates for best actor in this production, Super Bowl LIII, but I am now going to give you the one prominent nominee for best supporting actor in this performance, and that would be the punter, Ryan Allen, who three times placed the ball inside the 10.
Oh, he's great. Yeah.
And
yeah,
of course the coverage, the superb coverage of Matthew Slater. Yeah. Of course, as
great,
always,
great, but Ryan and the LA punter was pretty damn good himself.
Oh, well, Hecker, by the way, Bill Belichick was effusive in his praise of him all week. So yes, there were two excellent punters on display.
Yeah, well, when Jim Nance is like going, after the punt, like, what a moment, I said to myself, that pretty much sums up this game. You know,
yeah,
like,
well,
getting excited
when the
about
punt
it.
Takes
by the way, guys,
center
is
stage.
Is there anything that any member of the New Orleans Saints or a Saints fan saw last night that made them feel any better about the Rams being there and them not being there?
No,
that'll be.
They were rioting in the streets there in New Orleans.
Did you see the front page of the Times-Picayune, by the way, today, guys?
Oh, tell me no.
Super Bowl? What Super Bowl?
No.
Wow.
Yeah, well,
yeah. I actually think that New Orleans would have given them a better game.
100% they would have.
I do think there was some Brees? Of this. Some of this was just they were overwhelmed. I mean, you know, we're so used to young talent being stunning in sports today, and just kids doing these amazing things, and 19 and 20 and 21 year olds just you know, astonishing us with how they handle the pressure, that we almost expect it now when it happens. But you do have a team there with a 24 year old quarterback, and is Gurley about 1 year older or the same or that, and a 34 year old coach and all that, and they don't, you know, experience showed. It showed. I mean, you know, as I'm looking at the, you know, the thing that they give you out at the game there, you get all the, it's wonderful. You got the whole sheet in front of you here. You can rehash the whole game as you're doing a podcast. And I realize the Patriots get the ball, they drive downfield, and Brady throws an interception. Rams come out 3-and-out. Patriots come out again, drive from their own 12-yard line all the way down to LA's 28. Gostkowski misses a field goal. No one missed a field goal in that stadium all year. That's every crappy team that has ever played in there. They didn't miss a field goal. He misses a field goal. These are moments when, if you've got experience, you pounce. You come back. Instead, the Rams just looked completely overwhelmed. Goff looked at halftime like a kid who was still trying to catch his breath for being there. And I think inexperience showed. And I think a Drew Brees and some of these other guys who have on the Saints who have been there before, and certainly the coach, wouldn't have experienced that. So if they had caught the Patriots, now of course, you know, you can't mix nuts here, but if they had caught the Patriots on an off night the way that that the Rams did, and of course it was their defense that helped do it, I think New Orleans would have pounced a lot faster than the Rams did.
How about Sony Michel backing up Todd Gurley that 1 year in Georgia?
Yeah, how about that backfield?
How about that? I mean, but I'll tell you something. At the end of the game last night, Mitch, you were there, so I'm sure you saw it and felt it. When the Patriots started ripping off those big runs mm-hmm. on their last drive, on their way to the field goal that made it third, that just looked like the Rams' defense, as valiant as it had been for most of this night, was just punched out, because we have not talked nearly enough about what the Patriots' offensive line did to them last night. And Bob, I don't know, what was the narrative all season long about the offensive line? Was that always considered a strength, or did that, like the team, pick up steam as it went along?
Picked up steam, and it really took major precedence when they beat Buffalo with a disproportionate amount of running rather than passing in the penultimate game of the regular season, which, of course, was immediately dismissed, you know, by most of us as, well, it was against Buffalo. You know, well, no, it was the beginning of something very significant. And of course, Dante Scarnecchia, who, I really am not being facetious here, they've got to get nominated for a Hall of Fame as the greatest assistant coach in the history of the league. And anyway, he did it again. And yes, the line didn't have that kind of acclaim earlier in the season. And I'm going to take this opportunity right now to say that I certainly was one of the many doom and gloom people, that when they lose to the, dare I say, Lions, which I thought was a nadir, I was of the opinion that, okay, folks, this is the first day at a time of the rest of our Patriot watching lives. It's that they've finally gone over the cliff. It's not going to happen, period. And deal with it. And it's been a wonderful run. I bailed. I'm perfectly honest.
Hey, Bob, so I had forgotten that Scarnecchia retired and came back.
He retired and came back to the last year. And yes, he did. He retired, and they needed him. He's remarkable.
Mitch, by the way, he's 70 years old, Dante Scarnecchia.
Yeah, he's coming back next year.
He's been doing this a long time.
Well, rare is it that an offensive line can have an incredible game pass blocking and then throw a switch and have an equally incredible game run blocking when they decide to go to it. Now, listen to this runoff here. This is after Goff is intercepted by Gilmore, that was the turning point. You know, now really good teams know how to take advantage of that and drive that dagger into the gut of the team that just made the mistake. What do the Patriots, with the greatest quarterback in the history of the game, come out and do? They lead an entire drive without passing the ball. Sony Michel for 1 yard, Sony Michel for 26 yards, Sony Michel for 2 yards, Sony Michel for 3 yards, Burkhead for 26 yards, Michel for 4 yards, Michel for 5 yards, Michel for no gain, timeout, field goal. No pass.
Mitch, this is the brilliance of McDaniel and the brilliance of Belichick and the brilliance of Brady. Now read the drive before that when they scored the touchdown. All they did was throw the ball.
Exactly. And that's in the end, you know, they were matching wits with one another, the two coaches. But Belichick just had more stuff. It's like, McVay had some good cards in the first half. And certainly, as you pointed out early in the broadcast, Bob, I mean, you saw when they slow motioned those passes, Brady was putting it where against most teams, the defender can't get to it. And here there was a defender's hand got in the way. There was they were staying with the receivers the whole time, they got a finger on a ball just to knock it out of the way. I mean, the windows were incredibly small. That's how good and how anticipatory the LA Rams defense was. It's just that they didn't have any new moves to try come the fourth quarter. They had kind of played out their deck, and then all of a sudden, as you point out correctly, Mike, the Patriots say, okay, this drive, we're gonna go to Gronk for 50 of the yards, and next drive we're gonna do nothing but hand the ball off, and they just knocked them back on their heels, and that was the game.
And Mitch, I was thinking, and Bob, I was thinking about this last night. Okay, the bookends of this era. Okay, of an unexpected victory over the Rams when they were still the St. Louis Rams, and now this over the Los Angeles Rams.
Mm-hmm.
But remember, what this started with them shutting down effectively the greatest show on turf, okay, and giving them 17 points and beating them on a field goal, okay?
Yep.
So they have now played two Super Bowls against high-powered Los Angeles Rams teams in different eras, except it's the same era for the Patriots, and they have given them, Mitch and Bob, a grand total of 20 points. 20.
Oh. Oh. Well, you know, this was the ninth, as we know, Super Bowl of the Brady Belichick era, and the first one that was not a one-possession game.
I know. It's a blowout. 10 points, Bob. It's a blowout
game. But that's the first one. It's remarkable.
Okay, let's talk about this for a second. Okay, obviously, it's very difficult to go from sport to sport, but you can do it sometimes. All right. The Yankees, Bob, missed what? Two World Series between 1949 and 1964, right?
Okay. Yes, 19, yes, correct.
Or three.
59.
The White Sox and the Dodgers, the Giants and the Indians.
And 54 yeah. and 59, that's it.
Okay, so that's an extraordinary streak. Okay, the Russell Celtics, 11 and 13 years and didn't have to play nearly as many levels of the playoffs.
No.
Michael and the Bulls and six, it's interesting now that Brady and Michael now have the six. But when you add it all up, in the salary cap era and free agency and everything else, what compares to this? I mean, the Spurs did it for a long time and had the same coach, the way the Patriots have had the same coach. But I can't think of anything that surpasses.
Well, all these discussions, which are fun, and then we
but
can get
fun.
Into semantics.
It's sports, Bob. That's why I brought it up.
We can get into the semantics about what is a dynasty, and I'm a stickler as a history major for this, and people label things that happen in 3 or 4 year periods as dynasties, and they're not dynasties. Anyway, the granddaddy of them all, and that you start everything, are the New York Yankees from 1921 to 1964. They won, in that period of time, 43 seasons, 27 pennants, and 21 World Series. And I didn't do the numbers on the Canadiens, but they would be second in terms of a longest period of time in which you were the predominant team.
But, Bob, that's a different conversation. I'm talking about in an era. In an era, okay?
Right. Well, all right. Well, so yeah, we narrowed it down. You hit the Yankees only missing twice from 1949 to 64. I'll start with
– And Russell Celtics
Russell
and Auerbach
Celtics.
Russell Celtics
11 and 13.
Okay,
and now we come, we come to this. I think I'm pretty
well,
much.
Well, you have to. Neither one of those carry two elements that are really significant. Number one, the average NFL career is 3 years. That's not the case for baseball, and mm-hmm. not the case for basketball. Number two, this is salary cap era, and those two didn't have to deal with that. Number three, the NFL is just a the fortunes flip over so frequently that to continue to do this over six wins in 17 years. But I really, you know, getting to the Super Bowl is such a grind too that I count the losses as, you know, like you count overtime losses in hockey. You still get some points for it, and so going to a Super Bowl 9 times in 17 runs, right? Is that or no? No,
9 and 18, basically.
Yeah, if you start with their first one, that's not going to happen again. It's just not going to happen again. First of all, you're not going to get a quarterback to play this long anymore. The sport's too brutal. And you're not going to get a coach to stay in a place for that long because the fans are too brutal. So I just don't think you'll ever see that kind of combination. And no matter where you begin the conversation about the Patriots, eventually you hit those two. It doesn't happen without those two being there. Brady being essentially healthy for almost all of his career, that one year not being the exception. They still made the playoffs that year. And Belichick being Belichick for all that time and just not desiring to quit or go into the broadcast booth or go do something else. So I just don't think all these stars are going to align again. And I do think it's you have to give it like a difficulty factor when you compare it even to the more modern era of the Yankees or the Celtics.
All right, yeah. Bob. All right, yes. Bob. Here's what I have been writing and saying for a while, okay? And it plays into Mitch. It's the New York-Boston dynamic. Okay, what was the most important deal in the history of baseball? Oh,
yeah,
I know.
Babe Ruth
getting sold to the Yankees by the Boston Red Sox. What's the most significant transaction in all of football history? I call it the curse of the HC of the NYJ, Bob. Okay, I was at the press conference when Bill Belichick, after one day, resigned. Mitch, it was one of the most bizarre. And I like Bill Belichick, and I've known him for 30 years, and I like him. Okay, and I actually think he did the right thing by getting the hell out of there, but for reasons that included getting out of Parcells' shadow once and for all. So he's reading from this little piece of paper, and I'm resigning as the HC of the NYJ. Okay, we will never know, Mitch and Bob, how Bob Kraft got to him in those 24 hours. But he did. He did. And he obviously let him know that there was a much better deal waiting for him with the New England Patriots. And as they say, the rest is pro football history.
Oh, God. How that would have changed everything. Oh, my God. Yeah. And I can tell you, it was not universally greeted with any kind of approval or enthusiasm. I mean, I've got a folder on it, guys. It's hilarious if you go
and
back
Bob,
and look at it.
Bob, I will tell you, I was the only guy in New York, and I chastised him for the awkward way and the way all the stuff that he did. He left the Jets high and dry. They thought he had all that stuff. At the very least, he broke a handshake agreement, okay? But I remember writing that day that he was doing the right thing for himself or he would never get out from under the shadow of the Big Tuna. And that is exactly who knew this was going to happen and who knew Brady was going to happen. But to me, those are the two most significant transactions of all time.
Isn't it something and I guess, you know, it's always the thing that's most recent that stays in your mind. But you say Bill Parcells, and it feels to me like you're saying Tyrannosaurus Rex. That's how old Bill Parcells feels on today's stage with what Belichick has done and with all the new young coaches and all the rest. And, you know, we all came up through the time when I remember when you said Parcells with the same reverence that you now say Belichick.
I still do.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, just time and currency is... Meanwhile, speaking of the current and what happens to the future, so here's my question to you guys now that we watched... You know, Mike, you were fond for years of saying on the Sports Reporters, I think it was Tyson or whatever, everybody's got a plan till they get hit.
Yep.
So the Rams really got hit. I mean, they got knocked back. This is when the smoke clears, this was an embarrassment. And they were a little stunned last night. And I was very surprised to see Sean McVay as upbeat as he was in the press. You know, we were down in the tunnel and, you know, he wasn't hanging his head, you know. He was kind of explaining it. Yeah, you know, I got out coached, and yeah, we should have done this. And we probably should have done that. And Gurley, I don't get him at all. There's something weird about him. You know, he's going, well, some, you know, it's a team game. Sometimes you get the ball, sometimes you don't. It's like, does he have, is he one of these guys who doesn't want it in the big moments or can't live up to it? I don't know. I'm not going to.
So you're right. You said earlier, there's something we don't know.
Well, if he's hurt, why don't they just say it? I mean, he went out of his way to say, no, I had an MRI done. But in between the two playoff games, and everything was fine. I mean, you don't offer that kind of information if you're just trying to hide an injury. And the fact is, he had the Cowboys game. He looked great. And it's not like they didn't put him out there, Mike. They put him out there, and he wasn't any good. The same thing happened in against New Orleans. And then it looks like he just shuddered. So, I don't know. There's something weird going on there. And Goff really looked overwhelmed. He came back a little bit. He made a couple of good passes. And I will say that he threw the ball better than it was caught. Let's put it that way. There were no great catches except that one that was I think it was out of bounds, and they raced up and took the next play before
they could.
They
didn't review that one, did they?
No. But so my question to you guys is: are we looking at the Rams as in the NFC Championship next year, or is this one of those freak years and they're gonna suffer from the loss?
Mitch, here's the thing, and the Patriots. It's a very unusual thing. You wouldn't think it would be for the team that loses the Super Bowl to go back to the big game the next year. Okay,
23rd time.
The last team, I think, the last team that had done it before the Patriots did it now, I think, was when the Bills kept going back and losing. And they had the list. The Patriots joined the short list of teams that have won a Super Bowl the year after losing. It's a hard thing, you know, and we can go through the list. You know, the Seahawks, after they lost the Super Bowl, haven't been back. The Panthers go and get beat up by the Broncos. So the idea that the Rams are set up for the future, well, just history says they're not set up be playing in Miami next year.
Make no assumptions of that type at all. None. Absolutely not.
Well, it's interesting. Everybody's early season favorite is Kansas City next year. And, of course, Kansas City would likely have to go through New England or vice versa to get there. And I do think that the two best teams in football played in the AFC Championship. And you know, sometimes that happens. You're just on the same side of the coin. But that's a team that I think will be reckoned with. I think Mahomes is that kind of talent, and they have, you know, Hill and some of these other guys. They're
but
undeniable.
There's no guarantee. There's just no guarantee.
Bob,
we glossed over something, Bob, and I think we just, before we get to parting shots, I think we need to focus on this a little again. Kyle Van Noy, where did...
Oh, shut up.
No, Bob, because Mitch kind of just blew through
this.
It was
some Midwestern Rust Belt city,
The Lions did. The Lions did have him, right?
Torturous. It's just torturous. Let me look at. Let me look at his. Let's see.
Oh, this is so sad,
so
Bobby. When he does
three
this,
three tackles, one sack for 14 yards.
But maybe maybe his coach didn't see the latent talent and the heart in this young man, the way the greatest coach of all time did when he got to the New England Patriots.
That's all right. We take our revenge in Ndamukong Suh, who did exactly what I predicted he would do on Friday. He does not show up when you absolutely need him to. One tackle and one assisted tackle.
Yeah, they blocked the crap out of him. They did, Mitch. I mean, seriously, they blocked the crap out of him last night. He was not a factor in the game.
Yep.
All kidding aside, Mike, it is a remarkable thing about that Mike Vrabel is Rob Ninkovich, is Kyle Van Noy, and there's something, there's a thread, it's remarkable because
Can we talk about Hightower? And again, I referenced him briefly in my parting shot. Bob, he was great last night.
And they missed him a lot last year. I mean, so, you know, they had this. See, that Mike, that plays into one thing that I said, why I felt good, if not great, about their chances prior to the game, is that they had everybody available. They had everybody available, and that excuse or that reason for losing was not available to them. Now, not everybody's they're all hurting maybe, but they're available. And then when they lost Chung, it was the first time that they had any adverse thing happen of that nature.
But you thought it was, didn't we all think that was a big deal?
I thought, I worried, oh my God, I was scared to death. And I said, they're going to exploit this somehow. And then it turns out, you know, that it was their night when McCourty, the guy, makes a play that Chung could not have made.
Right.
Mitch, by the way, we're with Bob usually twice a week, okay? And I think we just have to take a moment here and talk about how well he bore up during the nearly 100 days between the Red Sox won the World Series and Boston got another title in football. Bob, you were so brave.
Yeah. You should see my nails, Mike. They're just down, and you know, I've lost about, 12 pounds, I think, and I need
sleep.
Yeah,
by the time we do our next podcast, the Celtics' new dynasty could be taken apart at the trading
deadline.
Yeah,
they had a good win yesterday afternoon.
Kyrie Irving could be on his way out of town from what I hear.
Kyrie, that's
tumult a... Tumult and dogs and cats living
but you, thank you, Mike. For, Mike, thank you
no,
for...
No, Bob, we've been friends for so long, and you didn't make a big thing out of
I know
it was ripping you up inside.
I toughed it out, and I was rewarded. And now the van is leaving for Fort Myers, and that's a good that's
but Mitch,
a beautiful
think about this.
A trivia question for the two of you. I don't know the answer to it. Has a receiver ever won the MVP
yes.
award? Of
Guess
the
who?
Super Bowl?
Happened, yeah,
wait,
several
wait,
times.
Wait, without catching a touchdown.
I don't. I doubt that.
That seems highly unlikely, doesn't it?
I would think DeAndre.
Well, Tom Brady didn't throw a touchdown. Pass.
I know.
Yes, that's right.
And in fairness, while Edelman had a terrific game. The MVP award should have gone to the defense. You just can't divvy it up.
My parting shot.
Mike will soon tell
why
you.
Why don't we do it right now?
The
Let's
MVP.
Do it right now.
Here okay. we go. Here's our parting shots. And Mike, what do you have in mind?
As my dear late friend Bill Goldman used to say, hush and listen. Okay. The night the Patriots had their most famous loss in the Super Bowl against the Giants in Super Bowl 42, the MVPs of that game should have been Michael Strahan and Justin Tuck and O.C. Umanyora and Matthias Kiyanuka and the guys who were in Tom Brady's face all night long. More than anyone, they're the reasons these Patriots aren't 7-3 lifetime in the Super Bowls and never did have a 19-0 season. But they sure did to get to 6-4 last night, the Patriots did. And the biggest reasons weren't the balls that MVP Julian Edelman caught. The reasons were the guys on defense. Only 10 teams in history ever scored more points than the Rams did this season. They got three last night in Atlanta. It was the first time since 1972 that a team played a Super Bowl and didn't score a single touchdown. Even though Brady was great when he had to be, and so was Edelman, and so was Gronk. But to me, the MVP of this game was Stephen Gilmore, who I thought was the best player on a defense that did have the best defensive performance any Super Bowl has ever seen. Or it could have been Dante Hightower, or whatever McCourty you like best. Guys playing the way they did for the greatest football coach who ever lived on the greatest night that coach ever had.
You know, guys... Believe it or not, there was other sport activity taking place in America this weekend. And on Saturday afternoon, a rather unusual college basketball game took place in which NC State, you know, they held Virginia Tech to 47 points, except they only scored 24. I said 24. 24 points. They shot 9 for 54, including 2 for 28 on threes. It was utterly and completely inexplicable. They're not a great team, but they're not a horrible team. No one can put a finger on what happened, but it happened. Now, and meanwhile, and that evening, in a D3 game, Fontbonne of Clayton, Missouri scored 146. Hey, how about that, huh? And they lost by 54. You heard me, 54. It was Greenville U of Illinois, 200. Fontbonne, 146. Greenville shot 33 of 91 on threes, which is somewhat better than what D1 NC State scored. That, by the way, that's not even a record. The record, Lincoln of PA scored 201 points in 2006. Anyway, my point is this. It was sport. And in sport, what is the ultimate moral of any sports activity? You never know.
You never know.
As we found out last night.
Gentlemen, the time has come. We should do away with the Super Bowl halftime show. Ooh. I don't mean kill it altogether. I mean deflate it, unhype it, try not to make it the biggest show in the world the way the league tries to make the game the biggest show in the world. Because in the age of Twitter, it's just no fun anymore. Remember Up With People? Well, we've lost the up and we're stuck with the people. And people are nasty and more they have agendas. Look at this year. Normally, bands would give their left tour bus to play the Super Bowl, except social media turned it into something political, chasing away all kinds of bands who considered it, and collecting 100,000 signatures urging Maroon 5 not to play at all to show support for Colin Kaepernick. The social media got so nasty, the NFL canceled the usual band press conference, fearful of the backlash. And what happened when the show finally went on Sunday night? Social media blasted it. Let me sum up the critical reviews on the internet. Three words. Maroon 5 sucked. There's nothing wrong with some entertainment at halftime, but somewhere this thing turned into the Olympics of musical performances with everyone who has an iPhone as a Russian judge. It's so negative, it turned a perfectly listenable band like Maroon 5 into a protestable and vitriolic moment. Who needs it? Besides, the smoke from the pyrotechnics of these things make the stadium smell like sulfur and also covers the entire third quarter in smoke. Of course, given Sunday's game, that wasn't such a bad thing. That's going to wrap it up for today's edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. We do this every Monday and Friday. Tell your friends if they enjoyed the TV show, they can get with it in the podcast world now and check it out anywhere you get popular podcasts, including radio.com. We'll be back on Friday when they'll dismantle the Boston Celtics through the trade deadline, and we'll see what Bob has to say about that. Until then, on behalf of Mike Lupica and Mitch Albom, I'm sorry.
He's tired, Bobby. Slept at the airport. Tired.
I'm going to start talking about myself in the third person now.
I like that.
Like Isaiah Thomas.
I like
when
that.
When Isaiah dribbles. Until then, on behalf of Mike Lupica and Bob Ryan, this
Look
is Mitch Albom saying, have a great week.